Well, not very good. Propagation was awful. There was one other conversation in the middle of my chat. I didn't have an opportunity to listen in on it, so I don't know if it was local or distant, but I would assume pretty much that it was local. I talked to basically Brooklyn. I didn't even talk to Staten Island or New Jersey. I filled 2 hours. I did it with three people. So I didn't have that many local contacts, no DX contacts, but I filled 2 hours of airtime. We had a long discussion of coffee and espresso machines and percolators and all kinds of fun stuff. It's a kind of a curious, a random kind of wheel of discussion on the 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock on 28.380. You're all invited. I'd love to hear if I could hear anyone from Long Island. Usually I cannot. Ground wave propagation for 10 meters tends to stop at the Queens-Nassau border. But I'd appreciate if anyone tries. Every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, we're there.
What frequency and when why do I?
It's usually 28.380. Sometimes I have a local noise spur, so I move over to places like 28.381.
Copy, thanks.
Great. I would love to have you try to see if you could reach us and I can hear you.
I'm back. My echoing did something a little weird. WB2BX.
Yeah, that's the nature of any kind of computer-based method. My All-Star, which is also basically just Internet Protocol packets, usually each and every technical net, by sometime around Paul's SpaceNet report, either the input or the output fails, and I have to reboot the program. So I understand, Frank.
Yeah, in this case, I think it was just fat fingers on the iPhone hitting the wrong thing. But anyway, apparently there's been a lot of solar flares, so despite sunspot numbers in the 200s, apparently the MUF has been kind of low. So I think one of Tad Cook's reports seems to suggest that the flares will go away in a week or so. We're going to have something resembling real sunspot peak propagation for about 6 weeks or so, which might be really nice because I think August during the sunspot peak is supposedly one of the best times. So it might be nice to see some real sunspot peak propagation, if that information's accurate.
Well, I certainly hope so. It would be nice for a change of pace to reach someone a little bit farther away than Queens.
How about a radio check? Radio check.
How about a call sign?
This is KC2KT.
Okay, you have full quieting. Good signal. What's your first name? Uh, Once again, I'm AC2GS. We're still open for business. So if anyone has any questions, comments, or topics, please hit that push to talk.
Hold up. Did someone ask for my first name?
Yes. By the way, my understanding is you're KC2KT, so that's Kilo Charlie 2 Kilo Tango. Is that your call sign, sir?
Correct.
Okay, well, QRZ
no
doesn't have a...
No results found, by the way, boy.
What'd you say?
No results found.
You mean on QRZ and such, right?
USO.
Yeah. Okay, I kind of thought so. Anyway, again, we'll give you all one last try. If anyone has any further questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit the push to talk. Otherwise, we'll move on. Okay, going, gone. This is AC2GS. Well, it's been fun. We must do this again real soon, like next Sunday night. So I thank everyone who participated, and I hope you'll come back next week and help me again make this an interesting technical net. But now it is time for WS2N Paul's SpaceNet report. So, Paul, you got it.
Very good. WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And it's a little early, so I don't traffic to make it all the way to 11, I don't think. We'll give it a shot. Anyway, there was a launch that went up today. It's been delayed a couple of times down in Florida because of the winds and rain, you know, from the hurricane that they thought it would be a hurricane by the time it got to South Florida, but it wound up in a Gulf, and it looks like it's going up to Pensacola area, Tampa, and no problem with the East Coast, but rain, so they delayed Cygnus flight. Cygnus is a cargo vehicle going to the International Space Station, launching on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. Cygnus is built by Northrop Grumman, used to be by Orbital Science, used to be the name of the company, and they got bought up by Northrop Grumman. Talk about companies getting bought up some years ago. So they launched these resupply missions. This would be, I believe, the 21st one over the years. They started in 2014, launching from Wallops Island, Virginia. The rocket that they used was the Antares rocket, and it was all done by, Northrop Grumman. Launching that rocket. Actually, was started by Orbital Science, but let's call it Northrop Grumman now. So you have the Antares rocket with the, they had the original NK-33 engines. They were really bad Russian engines. But they launched a couple of them to the space station using these terrible engines. And they had the Cygnus cargo vehicle on top. And sure enough, it was October, I think in mid-October, in that in that time frame, I think 2015 or 14, that the thing blew up right above the launch pad. So we're never going to use those engines again. So we'll go with the Russian R-181 engines. Now time ticks by, and there's problems with Ukraine and Russia, and the government, our government decides, well, we're not going to be using Russian engines anymore. Let's just use up the ones that we have. We're not going to buy any more from Russia. So Northrop are coming, stuck with, quite a few launches from Virginia, launching Cygnus to the space station every now and then. Usually around every 10 or 11 months, one would go. Then the next thing you know, they're running out of engines, and they decide to launch on an Atlas V rocket, which, Cygnus is very versatile. They could launch on anything. It's a very big thing. It's 14 feet in diameter. Maybe it started out at around 18 feet long. Now they extended that to around 22 feet long. So they can carry nowadays up to 8,000 pounds. Back in the original days, around 4,000 pounds to the space station. Let me drop this. So the Cygnus launched two flights on an Atlas V rocket. Atlas V is by the United Launch Alliance. So they launched the Cygnus while Northrop Grumman is redesigning and rebuilding a completely different rocket with different engines. The engines are now being produced by Firefly. The rocket is being produced by Firefly, and the engines are going to be supplied by Firefly as well. So we'll see. Time goes on. If that ever gets going, they're a little bit behind. As time goes on, all Cygnus rockets, Cygnus cargo vehicles will be launched by Firefly from Wallops Island, Virginia. But in the meantime, Atlas V has been pretty much retired, so the company has switched over to SpaceX for the last couple of flights. And that brings us to today, where Cygnus was finally launched, the 21st Cygnus. Three different rockets have put Cygnus into space. And it went well. So within 24 hours or so, we'll eventually be berthed to the space station using the Canada robot arm to do it. And we'll look forward to seeing that completed. Out of the 8,000 pounds of stuff, there's around 3,000 pounds that are scientific equipment. The rest of it is everything from food to clothes to important stuff that they need on the space station. But out of the 3,000 pound stuff, there's a repair kit on board. And the repair kit is going to be used to fix the what they call the NICA telescope that's attached to the starboard part of the space station. NICA has been up there a few years. It's an X-ray telescope, so it uses the ability to capture X-rays, comes through, hits these mirrors on an angle. The mirrors can't be, can't face the X-rays, otherwise it would go right through it or bounce off of it. They need to have the X-rays slide down these mirrors, and that's what they do. They're on an angle. The problem with NICER, by the way, NICER stands for Neutron Star Interior Composition Explorer. The problem with that is a while back, it developed a light leak. You can't have any other light coming into the detector when you're detecting X-rays. Otherwise, it fouls up the readings. a couple of these spots have a dozen or so areas on this telescope. A couple of these areas have light coming through. So, sure enough, they decided, we'll fix this. And they came up with a cure. They're sending a package up with these little pizza-shaped gadgets, you know, three-dimensional pizza-shaped gadgets. And the idea is to install the receiver where the light, x-rays come through, and that will stop the light leak coming into the nicer telescope. So eventually, after Cygnus is back with the space station and they unload 8,000 pounds worth of stuff, they'll eventually take this this kit, and two astronauts will go out and install this onto the nicer telescope, and that will put it back into operation. So I'll be following that in the future. Any comments? WS2N.
KE2AJU, Paul, this is Charlie.
Charlie, how you doing? And, do you have any comments?
Yeah, how's Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams doing?
They're still up there, over 50 days now. And, but they're doing good with it, each one spent, on board the space station. So to them, it's like going home again. And NASA's just waiting the test that they did down in New Mexico, and New Mexico with the thrusters, trying to duplicate the problem with Starliner, seeing if they can figure out exactly what's going on. They don't believe they've got the exact reason yet. That's what the last thing I read. So I think they're going to make it within a week or so on whether or not we'll be coming back on Starliner. Everything I read, it looks like it still will, but there is a chance that somebody might be saying, problem, we don't want to, have people I told you so. They don't want an I told you so coming back at them. So, it's a possibility they might just stay there. And if they do, there's already a contingency plan to use SpaceX, send up a Crew Dragon vehicle. There's one scheduled to go up the 18th of a couple of weeks. Okay, Roy, am I coming through? Okay, WS2N.
Are you able to fix the Starliner capsule?
Fix on it. They'll just do things to mitigate the problem. One of the big problems that they did find is that they face, when they're flying in space, to and from the space station, they face the rear end of the spacecraft to the sun. And the reason for that is that's where the solar panels are located, on the 15-foot diameter. By doing that, you're getting direct heat, direct sunlight from the sun, and they think that's creating extra heat in the areas where these reaction control jets are located. And by overheating them, they might be causing a problem. Pieces where where the fuel comes through, fuel and oxygen comes through, you know, similar to on a hose, you know, on a piece that goes in and out. You can imagine one of those with Teflon, a Teflon seat around it. The extra heat might be expanding the Teflon seat, especially on the oxygen side, not allowing enough oxygen to come through. And I know, Charlie, you know, with the old cars, you know, you have the car running out of rich flow. Thrust these things, and then what happens is the sensors on board, and the sensors say it's not working right, and it shuts it down. So to avoid that, they plan on eventually, you know, undocking with the crew. You know, Butch and Sonny will be inside, and as they fly away, you know, it usually takes about 4 to 6 hours before they actually start to come through the atmosphere. On the way up, it takes about 24 hours. They can make that in about 3.5 hours if they have a different kind of launch window. Sometimes it's a little over a day, 30 hours or so before they come. Coming back, they could get back to Earth and probably have, you know, maybe 6 hours. So they won't need much time. They will have fully charged batteries when they leave. Don't forget, when Starliner is attached to the International Space Station, it's getting all the supplies from the space station, including air, including electricity. So the batteries will be fully charged. And they get the batteries themselves could probably last 24 hours easy. So they will probably have no problem coming back. That's my guess. And my guess is that's eventually what they're going to do. Well, you know, I like to guess and find out if I'm wrong or right, you know, see what their decision will be within a week or so. Anyway, back to you, Charlie. WS2M.
But all this, you guys, they just got 3,000 pounds of stuff, you know, supplies. I figured maybe they had all the right parts to fix their capsule.
Oh, yeah, to take the service, well, you'd have to take the, you know, parts of the service module apart. You know, that's the piece that, of course, is attached to the spacecraft itself. That supplies like electricity and, you know, life support for the crew, fuel, oxidizing equipment for the fuel, oxygen for the crew. It's, you know, that's the service module. So, I mean, to actually, you know, go in there and actually fix something, you have to tear apart the rear end of the spacecraft. Right now it's attached to the Harmony module, and if you wanted to do that, you'd have to do an EVA and have all the proper tools, and you know, that's not going to happen. Even if they knew how to do it, that would be a monumental task in space. And unfortunately, you know, Boeing will not get that service module back to really look into it. When they bring it back, what happens is the spacecraft, along with the service module, separates from the International Space Station, and right before it comes back, the service module is jettisoned, and that piece eventually runs up in the atmosphere, and the rest of the spacecraft with the crew comes flying through the atmosphere, rear end going first. Heat shield heats up a couple of thousand degrees, slows down from 17,000 miles an hour all the way down to, eventually 600 miles an hour or so, and drogue chutes come out, and the drogue chutes eventually pull out the big three parachutes and the mains, and then they slow down to the point where they could jettison the heat shield. shows up and is flying off the spacecraft. And, you know, the last couple of miles down, I think two or three miles left before they touched down on the ground. By the way, this is not going to land in the water. It's landing in the dry deserts of White Sands, New Mexico. And then right before it touched down, it's got these half a dozen gigantic airbags that are inflated with nitrogen. And that will help soften the flow when it hit the land. And all should be done. Hopefully they get back safe. So that service module doesn't come back. So they need to figure this out. That's why they spent so much time up there. They've tested the jets a number of times, you know, attached to the space station. They've done countless tests in New Mexico. So we'll see. They figured out about this Teflon seal. Maybe that's expanding. And they know maybe to keep the spacecraft not pointing at the sun this time. And that'll be it. Next year, when the spacecraft goes up again, I'm sure everything will be rebuilt, including the helium leaks. You know, they still have helium leaks in this, and the helium is pressurizing fuel and oxygen. Right? So fire a jet, you have pressure behind it. You don't have gravity to help you along. So we'll see. Charlie, back to you. Put my fan on here. Not for me, but for my rig. Stuff to cook after a while. Anyway, there's a rocket that's going to be launched probably next year. They try to get it where they can launch it at the end of this year. But a European space agency. Right now they have a Vega rocket, which is a low lift rocket, which, you know, has the capability of launching a couple of thousand pounds. And now they have their Ariane 6 rocket, which has flown once, and they plan on flying that on a regular basis. And that's a heavy lift vehicle. And in the future, you know, years from now, European Space Agency would like to have a reusable rocket similar to what SpaceX has, and what a company called Relativity is building a rocket. The Electron rocket being built by Rocket Lab will eventually be somewhat reusable. So the European Space Agency doesn't want to be left out, so they're building a test rocket called Callisto. Callisto is it's a weird that they chose that name a while back, because that's the same name as the Starliner that's attached to the International Space Station. Callisto was named by Sonny Williams. She took the name from the Callisto. It sounds like the same thing, but it's not the exact same thing as the Calypso by Jacques Cousteau. She named it after that, but this one is supposed to be called Callisto. It's spelled differently. But anyway, the European Space Agency plans on having this reusable rocket launched by now next year, and we'll see how they do it. It has landing legs and all of that. We're looking forward to for that development. When I read more about it, see more about it, I'll bring that up to the net. But everybody's at it now with the same idea. for reusability. They got to compete against SpaceX. China's doing the same thing. They have a kind of a vehicle in development as well. We have two or three other rocket companies that are trying to do the same thing here as well. We'll see. A lot of payloads have to be launched. A lot of these people already have, a manifest. Some of them are years from launching, and they have payloads ready to go. It's amazing. Any comments?
You mentioned the Chinese people making rockets. They're having a lot of problems with their rockets, getting them off the ground. Their efficiency rate is, 60% up, and the rest blow up on the ground?
Yeah, I know. They have their problems. The only one that is close to blowing up that many rockets is probably Elon Musk. But that, that's by design. His theory is just launch a rocket. If it blows up, we'll figure out what's wrong with it. They have all the telemetry coming down, and then we'll fix it and fly it again next time. And China has a lot of issues with their rockets. They have small, medium, and large rockets as well, and they've had problems with all of them. But they managed to do you set enough rockets up there, some will be successful. They've landed a lander far side of the moon a year or two ago. Now they landed another one this year, and the one that landed on the far side of the moon this year actually picked up some regular soil from the moon, a couple of pounds, and actually lifted off again and sent it back to landed in Mongolia. So, they're doing okay. We're still way ahead of them. We've landed six people on the moon. We've had five rovers riding around on Mars. They had one, I think they eventually quit, and we still have two that are active for many, many years driving around on Mars. They have a long way to catch us, that's for sure. But SpaceX, unfortunately, they have a way of, I'm not crazy about the way they do things. Put together a rocket, launch it. If it blows up, then we'll figure out what's wrong with it. That's not the way to go. You don't get support that way. If the United States government did that, if NASA did it, Congress, who pays for all of this, they vote on it, would say, we can't do this. Their constituents would say, we're not going to pay for all these rockets blowing up. So what NASA has done, from day one, they've had rockets blow up too, but from day one, their way of doing things is build simulators, all kinds of simulators, all kinds of test equipment. They have vacuum chambers bigger than my house. And, they put a full-size spacecraft inside, and they pull it down to low vacuum. They raise the temperatures to very high temperatures. They bring it down to close to absolute zero temperatures to test all their equipment. They put it in on vibration test, the whole spacecraft, the whole thing will sit there vibrating for days to see if they can shake anything loose. That's the way to do it. Sound, it's very loud, goes off. So they have in these chambers, they'll have, big loud speakers or some sort, creating, 400 dB noises. to see if the acoustics will affect anything on a space vehicle. Whereas SpaceX, you know, I mean, you know, launch it and, you know, make the sign of the cross and hope for the best, I guess. Anyway, back to you, Charlie. WS to us.
Why aren't people using the Falcon 9 rocket? Would they shoot them up? They're reusable. And they're showing their values. Why aren't people just using them?
Oh yeah, no, he's got a lot of customers waiting to be launched on his manifest. He's over 300 successful launches and landings. That, you know, that's amazing. You know, they launch payloads, they launch spacecraft to planets, they launch crews to the International Space Station. They've launched crews not to the space station, just, you know, into orbit. You know, they've launched a crew of four called the Inspiration 4. They did that. They have another one coming up in a month. Not going to the space station. 250 miles close to Earth. We're going to launch it. It's going to be elliptical, so it'll go out to 800 miles and then come back down to around 200 miles. On perigee and apogee, it's going to be a big difference, a couple hundred, and then. Compared to, and then apogee would be around 800. And when they do this, it'll be, I think, a 4-day mission. During the 4 days, they plan on doing the first EVA, first spacewalk by a private company. So here they are, not attached. That's not good. Anyway, all four people will have to have an airlock, no airlock, and you're gonna one person is gonna go out, not two. One person's gonna go out, which is really against NASA's rules. You always have two people go out, and then that one person comes back. Then another person is going to go out, and then they're going to come back. You know. Meanwhile, the other two people that are in there that aren't going out still have to be pressurized because there's no airlock. So they're going to bring the whole spaceship down to you know, high vacuum. So I'm not crazy about this whole system, but that's what they plan on doing within about a month or so. I sure hope it works out. Charlie, any comments?
Yeah, Grumman took one hell of a chance launching that rocket today, you know, to the space station, with all the storms going down in Florida right now.
Yeah, they did wait a couple of days, so it was delayed. Last I heard, it was supposed to go up yesterday, but today it went up. And really, it's a wind constraint. They weren't too worried about the rain, you know, and lightning and all that. That was pretty much going to be on the other side of the other side of Florida. But they do worry about the wind. I think 35 mile an hour wind is what they really don't need, and the direction of the wind is important too. If the wind is, let's say, you know, a rocket is next to a launch tower. If the wind is, you know, face onto the rocket where the wind could be pushing it back toward the launch tower. With those things, when that launches, you know, you could have like 20 mile an hour winds. And if that's in the wrong direction, they won't launch because they're afraid that, the, you know, after it launches, even for the first couple of seconds, that that vehicle could get pushed back and hit the launch tower. If the wind is the other way, then it's okay, but still they have a limit, I think 35 miles an hour. You know, and apparently the wind must have gotten to the point where they could launch, and they launched. No crew on board, just 8,000 pounds on a Cygnus spacecraft going to the International Space Station. Charlie, back to you.
And they also got a splashdown coming. NASA SpaceX, crew of seven finishes their mission, returning, hopefully, March 12th.
March 12th. Well, okay. You're talking about the new crew going up. The new crew is Expedition 9. That's going to be four people. They will stay on board for almost 6 months. You know, and that's what they do. They go up for six months, and then they come back another 6 months, one after the other. So Expedition 9 will go up in a couple of weeks, and hopefully with the whole crew, all four. I hope it's not like what I said before. It's a possibility if the Starliner crew is not allowed to come back. They have to go back on a Falcon 9 crew vehicle. Then what NASA would do, they would just send up two people on the flight, and then four people would be able to return. That's a possibility. Hopefully not. Okay, so let's say Expedition 9 goes up. They talk to the space station. And I think they come back in March, roughly 6 months. Before that, you're going to actually have another crew go up, Expedition number 10. I was thinking of that. Right now, you have nine people up there. On the 18th, if they launch, you know, that's four more people. You know, and they got 13 people on board. They've done that before. They've had it like 13 people on the space station before, but not for long periods of time. They eventually have to find different places to sleep. They have so many different modules. But that won't last long. So let's say that crew comes up and dock with the space station. Now you have 13 people. Within a week or so after that, there's a crew of four. Expedition 8 that will be returning to Earth on their spacecraft. Don't forget, they've been up there for 6 months. They're coming to the end of their time. Including that one girl, Epps. She had worked for the CIA when she was years ago, and she finally got a chance to get up there. They had canceled her flight. Right before COVID, I think. But then they put her back in. Anyway, you're gonna have a crew going up. So temporarily, you'll have 13, and another crew come down. You'll be back down to 9, and then hopefully Starliner comes back with their two people, and you'll be back to your standard crew of 7. That's normal now, 7. When the space station first started out, first occupied in 2000, you had a crew of 2, and then eventually you had a crew of 3 on a regular basis. Then you had the disaster. You know, that thing burnt up in the atmosphere, killed seven astronauts. They had to hold up on bringing more people up and down to the space station. So then they went back to a crew of two for a while. Then as time went back, they got back to three. And then as SpaceX started launching crews of four to the space station, around four and a half years ago, they made it a permanent crew of seven on the International Space Station. So that's the most that they're supposed to have, you know, a permanent crew of seven. Yeah, can they get up to 13? Yeah, temporarily, but the actual main number is seven. Charlie, back to you.
Can't they make the space station a little larger to accommodate the new people?
Not anymore. But there's 15 different modules that are attached to the space station, and they don't plan on adding more. Not when I say they, NASA doesn't plan on adding more. There are three more modules being built by a private company called Axiom, and those modules will be sent up probably another year and a half or so. The first one will go up, and maybe another one after that, another one after that. By the time they have those three attached by Axiom to the front of the space station, it'll be almost time to end the International Space Station life. And that's planned on
ending. And also the main ground at a different
2030. My guess is, you know, maybe 2031. They don't plan on letting it go past that. But before that date comes, when they deorbit the whole space station, the next three modules that will be built by the private company Axiom will separate from the whole International Space Station and become their own little space station of three modules. And then, you know, for our spacecraft business coming out, of course, nowhere near as big as the ISS. That is a plan. They actually have one of these modules being built now. It's actually being built in Italy. This is a company that builds these things. So hopefully, they'll have that completed by the time it's time to deorbit the space station. So temporarily, instead of having 15 modules, you're going to have 18 modules. But that's not a NASA project. That's private. NASA will give them permission to dock the modules to the space station temporarily until it's time. Charlie?
All right. My computer just went down, so I lost my train of thought.
Understood. Yeah, I do that all the time. Okay. I just want to mention that SpaceX is planning on changing the location of where they splash down. Of course, they land in the water with the crew vehicles and with the commercial cargo vehicles that they send up. You know, they bring a lot of science equipment and stuff down from the space station. They land in the water, and they're able to bring that equipment back to NASA. And of course, they land in the water, and that's where the crews usually come out. Two locations, Gulf of Mexico and off the coast of Florida. You know, the east coast of Florida, 100 miles or so away from the land. They plan on changing that. They want all their spacecraft now to land near Santa Barbara, out near California. So that's coming in 2025, I heard. The reason for it is the debris that comes down. they have a service module. Each one of these vehicles has a service module, and similar to Starliner, that service module separates from the ISS from the Dragon spacecraft right before Dragon comes through the atmosphere. So they always thought that they shouldn't think, by the way. They always thought that, oh, the service module is going to burn up 100%, you know, and they've been, I don't know how many flights they've had with crew and uncrew. I think uncrewed is got to be 24 flights or more. So, you know, you're looking at over 30 flights of Dragon, maybe 33, 34 flights. Now, each one has they call it a trunk over at SpaceX, but it's a service module. And these service modules are supposed to be burning up in the atmosphere 100%. Well, they found out it doesn't. Well, a lot of it burns up, a lot of it makes it to ground. And they've decided, well, I guess probably NASA or the government has decided that we can't do this anymore. You know, you have stuff coming down, and maybe it's landing in Texas or who knows where around Louisiana. We don't know where it's landing, but you know, you're taking a chance. One of these things might come down and, you know, hit a car or something. So NASA and and SpaceX, I guess, got together, and they've decided that future landings or splashdowns will now be Pacific Ocean. Anyway, I'm looking at the time. I've killed enough time here, I guess. And I don't have any other real breaking news, that's for sure. But if you have any other last comments, Charlie, I'll let you do that. Back to you, WS1.
Starship aircraft with a fifth test flight. How many test flights are they going to have on this?
Oh, the Starship? Oh, well, what are they up to now? This will be the fifth one? Yeah, well, as many as it takes, that's the way they think. So if this one makes it, when I say makes it, they plan on launching it and having the booster and eventually the Starship itself pop on. Come back and land on land. Instead of landing on land, they want it to come back to where it took off from in Boca Chica, Texas, and come down vertically. These are all vertical takeoff, vertical landing vehicles. So instead of landing on a drone ship, they plan on coming right down next to the launch complex, the launch tower that it was launched from. They have these big arms sticking out. And as it comes down, it's going to grab, it's supposed to grab these actuators that are usually help the Starship maneuver as it's coming through the atmosphere. They'll be sticking out, these massive things. And as it comes down, these arms are going to be there. And so this I got to see. And then eventually they'll be able to do the same thing with the Starship. I think they got a long way to go. They think they could do it. I think on this mission, number five, they plan on doing that. Still not attaining orbit. They still have not attained orbit. This will be the fifth flight, and this one is not going to attain orbit. I don't know when they're going to attain orbit. So to answer your question, Charlie, it could be seven flights, eight flights, you know, test flights. I don't think that. I think they might do a dozen of them. You know, the idea is to eventually make this a complete reusable vehicle. Eventually, where you put crews on people on board. I mean, they're gonna have to do a lot of test flights before they put me in one of those seats. That's for sure. Back to you, Charlie.
That's it. About all I had to ask. Just in case anybody else has any questions.
That's pretty quiet. Anyway, thanks for all your input, Charlie. It's very good. Glad you hear all these tech nets. For now, I'm going to turn it back over to Roy. Don't forget, we have the club net tomorrow night, 8:30 on these repeaters. You don't have to be a member to check in and find out what's going on, but, you know, we'll try to be there. Roy, AC2GS, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Thank you, Paul, WS2N, and thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net. Thank you for all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate it. And I appreciate all of you people that participated tonight. I hope you'll come back next Sunday when we do it again. I want to remind people that if you hear something on the repeater that shouldn't be there, you can email RFI at limark.org. I would suggest that you switch to the input frequency to the person making the signal, write down the signal strength, and provide that information to that email address. Well, as always, our rebels now are done. As Dick, K2RIW, may rest in peace, used to end these technical nets with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. I always like to remind people of good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So please keep your mind open to new ideas. Don't open it wide enough that your brain falls out. Some people have unfortunately done that. But keep it open to new ideas. Have a great week, everyone. Stay safe, be well, and come join us all again next Sunday at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. I will close this episode of the Limark Technical Net, as I'm given to in these days. I'm AC2GS. Slava Ukraine.
Okay, very good, Net. And one comment about interference, Roy. Let me see if you're still there.
Yeah, I'm here.
I don't know if you like me. You push the power button. That's it. But, I was listening to the Coast Guard. It was on a webcam, you know, for watching a cruise ship. And you could hear the Coast Guard in the background, and their communications back and forth. And apparently they must have problems with interference. And the Coast Guard made an announcement, you know, about Channel 16. And, you know, anybody that is convicted of this, not only is it a felony, but they're responsible for the cost of, let's say, the Coast Guard coming out and investigating this or that. You know, that could be a fortune. People, you could lose your shirt, you know. And it's really the same thing with amateur radio. I've heard similar things, similar horror stories where people have lost tens of thousands of dollars doing that. Anyway, back to you, Roy. I just want to bring that up. I just heard that yesterday. Back to you.
Yeah, there's a price to be paid. Usually these guys get more adventurous as time goes on, and they do something really stupid, like interfere with an airport, or interfere with a fire department, or interfere with police, and then they really have to pay a heavy price. I don't know. I don't understand these people. I mean, I took psychiatry courses and psychology courses. I don't know what causes a person to waste their time in this way. I really don't.
I concur. Yeah, there's plenty of better things to do. I don't get it, but, well, you know, be that as it may, we have to live on the same planet, so there has to be rules, regulations, they got to be followed. Anyway, Roy, great night. Catch you next week, if not sooner. AC2GS, WS2N, 73.
Thank you very much, Paul. 73. Have a great week. I'll talk to you down the line, as John used to say. And everyone, don't ruin your life with these fools who waste their petty little lives doing